on the eve of Lutz Day rallies and with the six-month starting date of the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war coming up. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member at Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, joins us from Hamilton. Also joining us is Zakir Ahmed Mayet, attorney, activist, and political analyst from Johannesburg.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Taking a look at what I mentioned in the intro, and that were the statements that came from Osama Hamdan, who's a senior rep in Lebanon, based on the most recent developments concerning the genocidal war. One of the most significant aspects of what he made known in his speech was the fact that Hamas is still at the negotiating table when it comes to this ceasefire. In terms of some of the different parameters that were presented, he said that they were still sticking with what they had presented prior. Things like for the Israeli regime forces to be removed from the Gaza Strip, for there to be obviously some kind of route for the residents of the Gaza Strip to return, especially he noted the northern part of the Gaza Strip, and for aid to be delivered, amongst many others. But overall, he mentioned the fact that it doesn't seem like Israel is interested in any type of agreement at this point, putting the blame on the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and also the fact that any type of ceasefire, as mentioned in the intro, would prevent the genocide from continuing. So let's bring in now Ken Stone from Executive Committee, a member of the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, who joins us. Ken Stone, welcome. This ceasefire that was mentioned by Osama Hamdan in Beirut, he said squarely the blame falls on Israel, that it's not after reaching a ceasefire, and then blaming the Prime Minister Netanyahu. We know that Netanyahu's political career is hanging on this, but the mere fact that he said Israel is not interested because that would prevent the regime from continuing its genocide speaks volumes. What do you think of his statement there?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting me and wish everybody Ramadan Mubarak. On the question of the ceasefire, Israel does not want a ceasefire for a number of reasons. The first reason is that it wants to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians from Gaza, just as it wants to ethnically cleanse them from the West Bank as well, where they've conducted in the last 6 months some 300 murders of Palestinian residents there. They don't want a ceasefire because they want to destroy they want to destroy the resistance to Israel in the West, in Gaza, which is of course Hamas, part of the axis of resistance to Zionism and U.S. imperialism in West Asia. They'd like very much to wipe out Hamas. So, thirdly, they'd like to take over the Gaza Strip because it has an offshore gas field that Israel would like to exploit. And
okay, looks like your connection with Ken Stone is not working. Let's go to you, Zakir Ahmed. You know, this thing with the World Central Kitchen Convoy, I think we lost actually both. So I was just going to get into the whole issue of the World Kitchen Convoy that was targeted by Israel. The whole scenario regarding that is basically falls into two parts. One, Why was this convoy targeted when the coordinates were given to the Israeli regime? And secondly, given the fact that this was U.S.-based and you had nationals on there, such as from the U.K. and from other countries, it doesn't seem like that even prevented Israel from not targeting it, which brings about then the conclusion that has been made. Some say speculation, but it's a conclusion that has been made by many as to the fact that Israel does not want any type of aid to be distributed inside the Gaza Strip. This then lends a hand to the starvation that's happening more so in the northern part of the Gaza Strip where it's showing itself. We have upwards or the average median of about 700,000 Palestinians who are grappling with life and death because they're starving. I think around 50 so far have died as a result of starvation. But that number can quickly escalate given the fact that the aid that's reaching into the Gaza Strip is not enough. So that's one of the things that needs to be analyzed and dissected. Another aspect of this war, which has been ongoing now in terms of the complicity, is from the U.S. We are going to be looking at how that is fueling the genocide that's taking place. Even on the day that the convoy incident happened and the U.S. President Joe Biden came out and was in a heartfelt message, showed sympathy for what happened, the U.S. signed off on more military assistance. So at this point, that puts into question the sincerity of the U.S., even though many have said that the U.S. is not sincere, that what it says out in the open or in public or to the media is not what it says to the Israeli regime and how it acts with the Israeli regime in terms of the assistance that it gives that. The whole issue of aid, of course, is very pivotal to the existence of Palestinians. We're looking at the aid workers to have been targeted in large numbers. Kent Stone, unfortunately, you got cut off. I believe maybe it's best for you to continue from where you got cut off, if you remember.
I was saying that that Israel doesn't want a ceasefire for the simple reasons that they would like to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians from Gaza. They would like to destroy the resistance in the form of Hamas. They would like to get their hands on the offshore oil gas fields off Gaza. And they have this colonial project, and they've had it for over a century. They want to create a greater Israel that is clear of the people of Arabs, whom the Israeli government, in the words of Defense Minister Gallant, considers to be subhuman, human animals. So this is the reason that besides Netanyahu's own personal ambitions and survival instincts, that the Israeli government is not in favor at all of a ceasefire.
All right. We're going to hopefully touch on some of those topics because maybe that gives an explanation as to why you're killing so many civilians from the Israeli regime side. But taking a look at the whole World Central Kitchen convoy incident there, Zakir Ahmed, what is the story there? I mean, the coordinates were given to the Israeli regime, yet it was targeted. We're looking at the fact that even Israeli regime spokesperson, I believe, of the army came out and apologized. Didn't do that for the 32,000, 33,000 Palestinians that have been killed. But more and more now, conclusions are being reached that Israel does not want any type of aid, especially food, to be distributed in the Gaza Strip. And of course, with the record number of aid workers to have been killed so far, is that what Israel wants because it wants the genocide to continue?
The strike on the aid workers distributing food, we believe that they had certain tons of food with them at the time and they were transporting them. The entire trip was coordinated with the Israeli regime. They were notified of the route and they had been tracking the convoy for some period of time. Therefore, the argument that this was an accidental strike can be thrown into the bin. This is intentional, but we have to look at the timing. I believe the timing is particularly significant. The incident that preceded this was the attack on the Islamic Republic of Iran's consulate in Damascus. And this is an egregious violation of international law. It is precisely because of the protections of embassies and consulates that we don't have mass violations. For example, Julian Assange, when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy, the foreign powers could not intervene and extract him from there. This underscores the importance of diplomatic sites and access and protections. So when this strike took place in the afternoon, approximately at 5 p.m., Israel needed a distraction. And one of the other distractions that they could conjure up at short notice was to strike this particular aid convoy. We noticed on social media that the attention shifted very quickly from the strikes in Damascus to the atrocities of striking aid workers. This was merely a tactic by Israel to distribute some of the pressure they had obtained or received after they had committed such an egregious act. But going to the other point, Israel has systematically targeted the United Nations Relief Works Agency. It is their campaign to deconstruct every form of aid-giving organization, including this particular one. Their aim is to create a puppet regime. We know that they have made attempts to shape the ground by co-opting tribal leaders, clan leaders, trying to convince them to distribute the aid and to turn their backs on the resistance. This has been openly rejected by the clan leaders, stating very clearly that they would never abandon their resistance and they would never betray them. So this is all part of a grand scheme to deconstruct any aid organization and also to deconstruct UNRWA. But in this particular instance, I believe it was meant to be a distraction to distract from the blatant violations of international law that was committed in Syria in the afternoon.
Well, I was going to get into the Iranian consular building a little later, but let's get into it since our guest mentioned it there, Kent Stone. Of course, if you agree with what our guest there said, whether it was a distraction, or it could also, as some have said, is the Israeli regime feeling defeated, whether it's on the ground in the Gaza Strip and the fact that it is fighting on multiple fronts. In particular, the one that's obviously a big threat to it is Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, and it's also on the receiving end of the resistance groups regionally that are targeting Israel, now more so than ever. In the past week, the Islamic resistance of Iraq, from the Haifa airport to the Haifa refinery, I believe, or that was before. But anyways, it's on the receiving end of it. And the past week is just one example of it. Do you think that it's because of that that it wants to detract the world and then start a regional war, where some say, to bring in the U.S.?
Well, I agree that what the Israelis are trying to do by attacking the consulate in Damascus, which is a blatant violation of international law and actually a casus belli and grounds for war, an act of war, is because Israel would like to change the narrative. Israel is desperately striking out in all directions because it is not winning the war in Gaza against Hamas. Hamas is still holding its own. It is not winning the war against Hezbollah. Hezbollah is responding tit for tat to all the provocations by Israel. In the Red Sea, Ansarella has turned the port of Eilat into a ghost town. So Israel is getting more and more desperate and is looking to strike out against Iran and to change the narrative. The narrative of the world now is that Israel is a settler colonial state, a racist enterprise, something that doesn't deserve to exist any more than the apartheid regime in South Africa. This does not mean that all the Israelis have to be wiped out. It means that the government of the apartheid regime in Israel has to go and be replaced, hopefully, with a Palestinian state and all of historic Palestine. The U.S. Is in this deeply because of hegemony. The U.S. had undisputed hegemony over West Asia for about 75 years following World War II. And right now, they only have one reliable ally left there, a really reliable ally, and that is the State of Israel. So they are working, hand in glove with the state of Israel to resupply it with all the munitions that they could possibly want, and even send more aircraft, the recently announced long-range attack aircraft, which could be used,
right,
theoretically, against Iran. So the U.S. is behind this, and the U.S., I'm sure, gave the green light to the attack on Damascus because they, too, want to change the narrative and make Iran the bad guy in West Asia, when actually it's the U.S. and Israel.
Well, you know, if there's anything that needs support of that statement made there by Ken Stone, Zaki Ahmad, is the fact that on the same day that the World Kitchen Workers were killed, the U.S. actually agreed to more military aid for Israel. So that kind of shows exactly where the U.S. intentions are. And what the U.S. President Joe Biden says out in the public, as I said before, is not what's going on behind closed doors. The military aid is very pivotal because without it, Israel can't continue what it's doing. We're looking at an average of between 52 Palestinians being killed every 24 hours, let alone the structural damage that's taking place there. What is U.S.'s goal when it comes to this genocidal war? Is it drawing up plans, military plans, with Israel as to how it proceeds?
Most definitely. The integration between Israel and the United States reached its pinnacle during the Trump administration. We know that there was an integration of Israel into the central command structures, and there was an integration of air defense radars, etc., during this particular period. So this is an old relationship that has only grown from strength to strength. And the fact that the United States has provided diplomatic cover to Israel when the most grotesque violations have been taking place, despite the ICJ's ruling that there's a plausible case for genocide, despite the fact that they have not complied with the United Nations Security Council resolution, which the United States abstained from. And this was a plan. It was by design. However, even that Israel was not willing to come to the table for. This is an indication that both the United States and Israel are working together towards a regional restructuring. It is very clear that Israel is an extension of U.S. foreign policy within the region and a projection of American power. When we see these weapons packages going forward, and if we look at what was given, it was F-35s that will be converted to F-35Is, the Israeli variant. You will look at the bombs 1,800 and a few others. There's conversions of these dumb bombs to smart weapons with glide kits. These indicate precision strike capabilities. This is not for Gaza. Gaza has been pulverized. They've dropped the equivalent of between 2 to 4 Nagasaki Hiroshima sized bombs on Gaza. And it's very clear when you look at the aerial footage and you study the maps of Gaza and the satellite imagery, that there's not much left of Gaza, and yet the resistance continues to organically grow from the ground and continues to defeat Israeli armor and personnel on a daily basis. So it therefore begs the question, what was this for? And I think you've hit the nail on the head when you look at the timing. You look at the strike on the consulate, the respected general. I believe his janazah was held this evening, the funeral prayer. And this is an indication that they wanted to strike the individual that was in charge of the Northern Front and as well as ground forces in Syria. They then proceeded to strike these aid workers, and then you get the aid packages that are coming in. It's to try and shift the Islamic Republic as well as the axis of resistance away from the war theory of attrition and destruction over time to a more offensive war. What it does open up, though, is that Israel is a state that has become a lunatic state. It is committing genocide, number one. Number two, it holds itself up to no rules in terms of international law, violating a diplomatic site and killing such a high-ranking individual. The next best thing that they could do is assassinate a president or a senior minister. That is how ridiculous the actions of Israel are, and yet the United States has failed to rein them in. Therefore, I look at the United States and Israel as one in the same, and the defeat of Israel will be the defeat of the empire. What we need to understand is this is not about Gaza. It's not about even the axis of resistance. It's about the empire versus the global south, those that are oppressed versus those that are arrogantly demonstrating their power and oppressing those around the world. That's the real battle we're facing today.
Yeah, Ken Stone, now, the reshaping of the landscape of the region, I believe, is one of the things that you mentioned that may be one of the reasons, if not a key reason, for Israel to continue its genocide in the Gaza Strip. We know that it wants to carve out a buffer zone and wants participation of certain Arab countries. That's not going to happen based on what the response has been. But there's another aspect to this, which is this trade route. This has been discussed and presented before, the India, Middle East, Europe economic corridor. And I don't believe that that's going to happen either, because it has to involve Saudi Arabia. And at this point, Saudi Arabia is not very receptive to what Israel has done. So do you think that Israel is going to continue with these aspirations in mind, in terms of trade, for example, to basically want to push the Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip and then maybe go through with that trade route?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I agreed with every word of your other guest about the U.S. and Israel trying to change the landscape of what we called, or the British called, the Middle East, West Asia, and North Africa. And they have been doing that since the war on terror was announced by George Bush. Of course, it was not a war on terror. It was a war of terror against the mainly Muslim people of West Asia, go all the way from Afghanistan, across Iraq, and Syria, and, of course, all the way to Libya. And that plan has not gone away. The U.S. has murdered millions of people in that war of terror, and they have spent trillions of dollars, and they are still occupying Syria, the eastern third of Syria. Their troops are still in Iraq. They have bases circling. They have bases circling Iran, and they are in Palestine, working their best to help the Israelis create the so-called Greater Israel. So yes, they are still continuing their project in West Asia.
So, okay, Ahmed, I'm going to end with you. We're looking at a good day tomorrow, so I'm wondering how that's going to transpire, given the fact that Iran's leader has said that we need to have this support of people around the world, which obviously the Palestinian cause has been getting. What is your projection about what's going to happen tomorrow when it comes to the Quds Day rallies?
I think it's going to be one of the most important Quds Days that we will ever experience. The battle is raging on. It's the battle not just for the soul of Palestine, it's the soul of each and every one of us. Those that believe in truth, those that believe in justice, those that believe that there is accountability in this world and that one cannot believe that you are superior to another. And I believe this is going to be a watershed moment in South Africa, Johannesburg. I know that there are Quds Day events and protests taking place outside the U.S. consulate. The United States and Israel is being viewed as one in the same. These are the perpetrators of atrocities, genocide, and violations of all peoples around the world. The Israelis have also become victim to the apartheid mentality and colonialism, as South African, white South Africans were also victims of that, indoctrinated and brought onto the wrong side of history. Al-Quds Day is going to define the world today, tomorrow, and I believe that it is important for each and every one to participate in whichever way they can.
Thank you for that. Zakir Ahmed Mayet, we appreciate it. Attorney, activist, and political analyst from Johannesburg. Ken Stone, sorry, we're just out of time. I can give you about 15 seconds if you want, only.
It'll be a defining moment tomorrow and on Saturday in Toronto as well, because we're marshaling lots of people in view of the fact that the police attacked a peaceful pro-Palestinian protest last Saturday.
All right. Thank you for that. Kent Stone, Executive Committee Member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For Mika Vitagwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. today's lesson, I hope you've been reciting the Quran in the holy month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here. Holy month of Ramadan, unfortunately, it is quickly coming to an end, and I'm pretty sure that when the holy month of Ramadan ends, that we are really going to feel sad. On one hand, you do feel happy because the holy month of Ramadan has successfully passed and you have been able to successfully pass this trial and this test that was there given to every single one of us. But at the same time, you do feel kind of sad, you know, because, and it's interesting, in the du'as of Sahifa Sajjadiyah by Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, you know, we find that when he says farewell to the holy month of Ramadan, he says farewell in this manner, you know, like he's losing a companion, this generous friend that was with us for 29 and 30 days. And it's really beautiful, so we will be a little bit sad as well. But before the holy month of Ramadan is over, because we still have a few days and a few nights left, I hope you've been reading the Holy Quran. Now, you know, I know in one of our earlier programs in the holy month of Ramadan, we talked about the importance of reciting the Holy Quran. And so just in case, you know, the busy materialistic schedule and routine that we had, you know, it kind of made us forget to recite the Holy Quran in the holy month of Ramadan. Well, this is a very humble reminder to recite the Holy Quran in these last few nights that are remaining of the holy month of Ramadan. Let's not, you know, waste our time. Let's not, you know, not take advantage of these blessings that are left in these last few nights of the holy month of Ramadan, right? Its days are the best of days, its nights are the best of nights, its hours are the best of hours, as the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi himself has said.
Ramadanul Mustabin Jaa bin Nuril Mubin Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadanul Qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about reciting the Holy Quran in these last few nights of the holy month of Ramadan. Of course, you know, we have to keep in mind that we should have been reciting the Holy Quran in this holy month, but you know, for some reason we didn't listen to the earlier programs, or we were busy in this materialistic routine, you know, hamster wheel of ours that we could not get out of, or for whatever other reason, you know, maybe we were too tired, we were exhausted, the fasting was taking a toll on us, you know, for whatever reason, may Allah forgive us, we weren't able to recite the Holy Quran in this holy month. Well, we still have some time, and Allah the Almighty is always, if you will, with arms wide open, waiting to invite and welcome His creatures and His creations, whom want to come towards Him. So, of course, there's this famous tradition which we all, you know, listen to in the holy month of Ramadan from the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, who says that reciting one verse of the Holy Quran in this blessed month of Ramadan is like reciting the whole Quran in the other months of the year. So, you know, we still have a few nights left in the holy month of Ramadan. Why not go ahead and recite the Holy Quran? You know, I would like to say as much as we can. I will stick to that statement, as much as we can. There's only a few nights left. Now, this doesn't mean that we recite the, you know, as much as we can, and then, you know, after the holy month of Ramadan, we just don't even want to look at the Holy Quran anymore. This is why I'm saying as much as you can, as much as your capability, you know, and as much as it is enjoyable. The last thing that you want to do is force yourself to read, you know, the Holy Quran, even though you should force yourself to read at least one verse of the Holy Quran with its translation and kind of think about it and ponder over it. At least one. That you should force yourself, you know. And what's the beauty of the Holy Quran is that you will see, once you start to read the Holy Quran and you start to read the translation and kind of think over it, automatically you will start to want to read more and more.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
به توفیق الهی امت اسلامی و ملت مسلمان فلسطین بر دشمنان خودشون قطعا پیروز خواهند شد و خواهند دید اون روزی را که ریشه رژیم جعلی صهیونیست از سرزمین فلسطین کنده خواهد شد.
With God's grace and divine providence, the Islamic Ummah and the Palestinian nation will emerge victorious, inflicting a decisive defeat on their enemies, and we shall see the day when the fake Zionist regime will be uprooted once and for all from the land of Palestine. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Tempers are running high in Pakistan over Israel's onslaught in Gaza. In a dramatic incident, a KFC restaurant in Pakistan-administered Kashmir was set ablaze during an anti-US-Israel protest. Following the incident, police detained over 50 individuals who were accused of attacking the restaurant in the Mirpur district.
We do not support the burning of KFC, but we want to boycott it as it is in support of genocide. We stand with boycott and we do boycott. We do not want them, we just want them not to fund Israel and help them in their genocide.
The arson comes as US-Israeli genocide in Gaza shows no signs of abating. The regime's attacks on all areas of the besieged territory, including hospitals, schools and aid convoys, continue.
We are already seeing the impact on the economy, on the financial decline of McDonald's and boycott. It's huge. Even in some countries, in Arab countries, those outlets are being closed because nobody is buying it.
Free! Free!
The ongoing genocide in Gaza has fueled anger and frustration among people worldwide, prompting calls for boycotts against entities believed to support Israel financially or politically.
Boycott is something that we are, this is what we feel from our heart, from inside, that we don't want to support their economy. We don't want to support the companies that are supporting the Israeli soldiers. So, for that, we need to boycott. I know this is not a permanent solution, but we have to boycott.
Authorities are now faced with the challenge of managing the fallout from the incident and preventing further escalation of tensions.
As tempers run high in Pakistan due to the call for boycotting pro-US and pro-Israeli brands, the targeted destruction of a KFC restaurant represents a symbolic reaction of the people, both locally and globally, against US-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Israeli newspaper Maariv published an article saying Turkey is seeking to enhance relations with Israel. Turkish Agency for Combating Disinformation denied the claims in a statement. The agency said the claim in the Israeli media that senior Turkish officials sent a message saying we want to improve relations with Israel is not true. Turkey said its temporary charged affair of Turkish embassy to Tel Aviv was summoned on the 25th of March, and that claims by Israeli media that Ankara proposed that the two countries' ambassadors return mutually is not correct. The thing that forced Ömer Çelik, AK Party spokesperson, to point out Israeli crimes in a statement to assure that his government stands against what Israel is doing.
The dead human bodies and corpses found around the Shifa Hospital in Gaza once again clearly showed the genocide committed by Israel. It is necessary to implement the ceasefire decision in the Gaza Strip.
This subject has been considered sensitive for Turkey, especially after the ruling party lost the local election. Many analysts suggested one of the reasons was the AKP government not fully cutting ties with Israel. Many voters left notes on electoral papers such as, "You sold Gaza, we will sell you as well. And we will not vote for a government that does not cut trade with Israel."
"I am studying in the UK, but I came back here to cast my vote because I strongly oppose trading with Israel and want it to stop. I actively participate in rallies in the UK and personally boycott companies and products that support Israel. I believe that every penny spent on these entities translates into bullets that target Palestinians. And I am committed to taking action to support their cause."
Overall, trading with other countries is generally acceptable. However, considering the recent aggression on Gaza, Israel has demonstrated a disregard for international laws. Therefore, I believe that trade should be temporarily halted and all ports closed to convey to Israel the gravity of its actions. Israel's persistent aggression, disregard for United Nations resolutions and human rights, and obstructions of aid delivery necessitate a strong response. Turkey provides essential materials to Israel, such as copper, cement, iron, and food. Therefore, if Turkey were to halt trade, Israel might retaliate in kind.
Turkish citizens have been taking to the streets since the beginning of the aggression on Gaza, demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They have also called on the government to sever all ties with Israel. Analysts say the public want to send messages to the president through rallies and social media campaigns. However, it seems Erdogan is turning a deaf ear to their calls for action. Erdogan, who tried to contain his people with the pro-Palestinian rallies and slogans, now finds himself not only criticized for double standards, but also grappled with losses in local elections. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq has been standing in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza by carrying out retaliatory operations in the region. Resistance forces in Iraq have started their operations by striking a number of U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in response to Washington's support for Israel. The operations have now entered a new phase as Israeli positions have been directly targeted in various locations such as Haifa, Eilat, and elsewhere.
"We have always been firm in our stance to support the people of Palestine. The Palestinian cause is central to the axis of resistance that has supported the people of Gaza by striking Israeli positions. The regime's positions, whether it's ports in the Mediterranean or elsewhere, are targeted using ballistic missiles, drones, and all other weapons by our brothers in Yemen, Lebanon, and here in Iraq. The operations are clear evidence that the axis of resistance works in harmony and has the strategic potential and the means to pressure Israel and those states that support the systematic killing of innocent civilians."
The intensification of the attacks on Israeli positions shows that the massacres being committed by the regime in Gaza will not remain unanswered. The second phase of the operations, which directly targeted Israeli positions, proves that regional resistance groups are able to inflict serious damage to Israel's maritime and airspace interests.
Resistance groups in Iraq and across the region have proved their ability to respond to the Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. They vow that their operations will intensify even more as long as the genocidal war on Gaza continues. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
¶¶
Under the title, Flood of the Free, and as part of the activities scheduled to commemorate Al-Quds International Day, the Permanent Committee of Al-Quds International Day organized a political forum this Tuesday at Al-Assad Library in Damascus. The Iranian ambassador said that defending Palestinians is the duty of the free world.
We will continue to defend Palestine because it is a fundamental principle, not a time-bound interest. All free people in the world must support the Palestinian people, as today we witness the Zionist entity committing various crimes, from killing innocent people to the recent attack on the embassy building. The response of Islamic Republic of Iran will be proportional to the Zionist assassination crime.
During the ceremony, Syrian and Palestinian researchers and specialists focused on the need to preserve the achievements made in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. They condemned the Israeli criminal aggression against the Iranian embassy.
We offer our condolences to the Islamic Republic of Iran on the martyrdom of Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and his comrades who were martyred in the Zionist attack on the Iranian embassy building in Damascus. We affirm Syria's solidarity with Iran, which is facing these attacks due to the hysteria of the defeated entity in its war against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
The researchers considered that Al-Quds International Day should be an opportunity to increase public pressure on the international community to force the Israeli regime to stop its war on Gaza.
The Zionist enemy is trying to send a message that resistance comes at a high cost through the destruction of Gaza, killing and genocide, unaware that our peoples cannot be intimidated. Al-Aqsa flood operation overthrew and buried all the sectarian projects sown by Western colonialism and the Zionist entity.
What makes Al-Quds International Day this year special is the steadfastness of the resistance and the people of Gaza, who thwarted the goals of the Israeli enemy. The symposium concluded that Al-Quds International Day has consolidated the concept of resistance, while Al-Aqsa Flood operation proved that with strong faith, the oppressed Palestinian people can achieve victory over the Zionist occupation. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has accepted his party's defeat in the local elections. From the headquarters of his Justice and Development Party, also known as the AK ruling party in Ankara, Erdogan appeared with his wife, thanking his supporters for participating in the elections and admitting his loss. Erdogan assured that the results were a turning point for his party and vowed to respect the nation's decision. For his turn, the AKP candidate Murat Kurum expressed his gratitude to his supporters and promised to continue working for Istanbul. Kurum, who was a former environment minister, lost the Istanbul mayoral election for his opponent Ekrem İmamoğlu with a 12% difference.
I will persist in my endeavors for this city. We will be present among the people in the streets following President Erdogan's guidance. Our nation's message are of utmost importance and we are committed to interpreting and acting on these insights for a better future for our country.
Turkey's opposition Republican People's Party dealt a severe blow to President Erdogan and his party by winning major cities and several provinces in the country. Analysts say this is the result of neglect from the ruling party to the voters' demands in previous elections. Among several issues, the economic crisis and Erdogan's inability to control the lira drop was the main issue for voters. Another one was his double standards on Gaza, which forced many of his supporters to vote for other Islamist parties.
What happened in local elections is punitive voting from the people. We expected the ruling Justice and Development Party to lose in both Istanbul and Ankara. Once again, what this surprising result shows that there is a major setback and that their supporters are trying to send a message. Economy, alliances and parties' performance decline during 22 years are part of it. However, the main issue is that Islamists who are supporting AKP were expecting a different stance from the war on Gaza.
The opposition party did not only win Istanbul, but also seized several districts from AKP that were considered a stronghold of the ruling party. Turkish people believe that a change is needed and that both the ruling party and opposition need to work for the sake of the country and its people.
I think that Recep Tayyip Erdogan deserved it. Why? Because first he did not raise the retirement salaries. elderly who used to vote for Erdogan for 23 years. Yesterday they gave their vote to CHP. Prices are rising every day with same salary. Economy is worsening. He says we learned our lesson for the past 30 years. Didn't you learn the lesson?
More than 61 million were eligible to vote. Voters' turnout was registered at 76% across 81 provinces. The local elections results are alarming for the ruling party. Many are considering it a chance for opposition parties to unite and start preparing for the 2028 presidential run if they want to oust Erdogan and his party. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Iranians took to the streets of the capital Tehran and gathered at iconic Palestine Square at midnight after the deadly Israeli attack on Iran's embassy in Syria. They chanted death to the Israeli regime and death to America as they waved Palestine flags. The protesters expressed their support for Palestinian people in Gaza as Israel's genocidal war continues unabated.
When we heard what has happened, we couldn't tolerate it, and we came here for the sake of our martyrs. Our Muslim brothers and sisters, Palestinians, Syrians, are all a part of our own nation, and there's no difference between us.
Two of our generals were martyred, so we have gathered here to show our readiness for retaliation. We are asking the Islamic Republic of Iran to take serious action against these atrocities and the disrespect towards our nation and also the innocent Palestinians.
On Monday, Iran's ambassador to Damascus, Hossein Akbari, confirmed that Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and his deputy Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi were killed in the Israeli attack.
It is our duty to come out because we felt that even though the resistance movement is showing patience towards the Israeli regime, we are still witnessing that the regime is pressing ahead with its atrocities, with the recent incident of the attack on the Iranian consulate.
We have gathered here at this hour to show that the innocent martyrs in Syria were killed amid injustice and impunity by the bloody hands of the Zionist regime. The regime has been killing innocent people, especially children, for many years.
The attack came as almost 6 months into the Gaza hostilities, the regime has failed to achieve its objectives of destroying Hamas, despite killing tens of thousands of Palestinians, mostly women and children. The two slain Iranian generals had been comrades of top Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani, who was also assassinated in an attack in January 3, 2020. General Soleimani played a key role in fighting and decimating the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in the region, particularly in Iraq and Syria.
A large number of people have gathered here in Palestine Square to strongly condemn the recent Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in the capital of Syria, Damascus. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
In a statistic which may amaze and anger those in their 20s and 30s, in 1973, the average French person dedicated just 10% of their income to housing. In places like Lisbon, that figure is now 63%. As the housing situation across Europe is being called the worst it has been in 70 years. With winter prohibitions on evictions ending with the arrival of spring, protests are being held across Europe against the lack of affordable housing.
Houses are made for living in, and not for financial speculation. This is a fundamental truth which has been forgotten by successive French governments. They have turned their back on the many victims of our long-running housing crisis, and across Europe it's the same. What's worse is that they'll have many people evicted by landlords looking to cash out on tourist money for the Summer Olympics.
One out of four French people suffer from a serious housing problem, so it's no surprise that better housing has been a top issue for voters in election after election.
There's a real lack of decent, new, and safe housing in France and Europe, as much of our stock dates from after World War II. The laws requiring that 20% of lodgings be made available to lower-income citizens is not enforced, and we just don't see that the government cares about the incredible difficulty of finding affordable housing here in France.
In Paris, housing prices are up a back-breaking 70% since 2009, the start of the great financial crisis, and the failed response of far-right economic austerity. The hiking of interest rates in 2022 caused some housing markets in Europe to decline slightly, but others continued to rise. That also caused building costs to soar, reducing private construction. Housing groups insist that lodging issues could be fixed nationwide in just 5 to 10 years if the government's laws favored renters and regular citizens instead of landowners and real estate speculators. The primary culprit seems to lie in the refusal of right-wing economics to allow governments to invest tax revenue in building more affordable real estate, and also in the vast sell-offs to private corporations of government housing since the 1980s. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
This year, the holy month of Ramadan in Pakistan has been dedicated to the oppressed people of Gaza, with Pakistanis asserting that they will never forget the plight of Palestinians in war-torn Gaza. Throughout Ramadan, they have continued to raise their voices against Israel's brutalities and the genocidal war on Gaza. This week, activists from Save Gaza campaign organized protest demonstrations in all major cities of the country. They also staged protest sit-ins to condemn what they perceive as Israel's barbarism in Gaza.
Pakistan should move on international fora, United Nations, OIC, and other international fora for ceasefire, to save Gaza, to save Palestinians, to stop this genocide, number one. Number two, establish a humanitarian assistance corridor. Number three, start proceeding against Israel in International Court of Justice and International Criminal Court, and also on the platform of the OIC for their war crimes, for their crime against humanity in Gaza.
While leaving the comfort of their houses behind, individuals from different faiths and backgrounds gather on the streets, setting up makeshift iftar meals to break their fast during Ramadan. These gatherings were not just about sharing food, they were about sharing solidarity, empathy, and hope for the people of Gaza.
This is the message from D Chowk, Islamabad, Pakistan, that we are with you. Our hearts are beating in Gaza, and for the regimes across the globe, our message is that you have been exposed. Your so-called democracy, your so-called freedom of speech, your so-called international humanitarian law are badly exposed.
Images of destruction and suffering from the Israeli war sparked a wave of empathy among people from various walks of life in Pakistan, prompting them to increase their advocacy campaign within their communities for the plight of oppressed people in Gaza.
The gesture of Pakistanis holding protest demonstrations and breaking their fasts on the streets to show solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza underscores their steadfast commitment to amplifying voices against Israel's ongoing genocide and advocating for a ceasefire. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
زشته دیگه ما این همه میلیون ها تحصیل کرده داریم.
We see so many illiterate men and women who are still weak at reciting the Holy Quran, and this is not good. In today's world, and with the spread of all these special social media and TV and radio stations which play the Holy Quran, no one must be illiterate in terms of reciting the Holy Quran. Thus, we must start practicing the recitation of the Holy Quran at any level of knowledge we are. The best chance to practice the Holy Quran is the month of Ramadan. We must take the Holy Quran serious in our life. One of the major deeds during the nights of Qadr is recitation of the Holy Quran. This recitation must be with contemplation. Also, good exegesis of the Holy Quran is the one which attracts both the elites and the public. This means that the ulama who are explaining the ayahs of the Quran during the month of Ramadan must do it in a way that all the people with different levels of knowledge understand the main contents of the Holy Quran. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Today, time for solidarity with Gaza. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. This year, the World Oats Day is different from the previous ones as the fabricated Zionist regime of Israel has launched an all-out genocidal war against the people of Gaza for 6 months. The world is witness to gruesome scenes of the crimes of Zionists in Gaza, while most of the so-called international organizations have kept silent as the main international body. The United Nations, for a long time, has turned into a machine of giving statistics